Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And politics inevitably intrudes upon our lives, and particularly when it comes to medicine and our freedom of choice in healthcare, our access to supplements. So today's broadcast is going to be somewhat political in nature. And I feel that with the intelligent medicine concept, we really bridge the gap between our current polarized political parties, because you can be a left-wing progressive Democrat or you can be a right-wing Republican or Libertarian, but you can still espouse the belief that we ought to have freedom of choice when it comes to supplements and foods, and in terms of our style of healthcare, our healthcare providers. And so there's a great deal of common ground, and there's kind of a grassroots movement, I guess you could call it a Green Tea Party, that attempts to assert our rights in this arena of politics. And today we're going to talk to an individual who is involved with the Alliance for Natural Health. ANH is an organization that's near and dear to me because I serve on the board of ANH, and ANH is a wonderful organization. And to tell us a little bit about it, here's Daryl Rogers. I don't know what your formal title is, but you're sort of a minister of propaganda there at the Alliance for Natural Health, aren't you, Daryl?
That I am, and that is the title I go by. It's on my business cards. but I'm the campaigns and communications director here at the Alliance for Natural Health. And just a quick kind of background, the organization is a grassroots advocacy organization. We work to protect and promote access to complementary and alternative health choices for individuals at the state and federal level. It was founded in the UK, actually, by Dr. Verkirk, and we thought that the model that he had created as an advocacy organization, because what we're often seeing in Europe and the limiting of their access to dietary supplements, to the practitioners of their choice, medical procedures of their choice, individuals' choices in Europe, are often making their way, unfortunately, across the Atlantic. So we thought that that would be a fantastic model for advocacy here in the United States, and the Alliance for Natural Health has been around for about 5 years now and has done some fantastic work, as I'm sure you've told your listeners many times, Dr. Hoffman.
Well, indeed, yeah. We always point our listeners in the direction of the Alliance for Natural Health when there's some upcoming threat to our access to supplements. We have sounded the alarm repeatedly, and if you want the lowdown on whatever's happening on the political scene, go to anh-usa.org. Tell us about your website and your social media, how people can get involved.
Sure. We make it super easy for folks to get to our website, to take action, to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We have content that's original, that is in-depth, that is cutting edge, that goes out all the time. So anh-usa.org, there's a space right on the homepage to enter your email address, and you will receive our natural health newsletter. You get it once a week on Tuesdays. It is all original content that we draft. It is really the best information about protecting your access to natural health and vitamin supplements anywhere, really, on the Internet. So that's where you can find it. Also find us on Facebook and Twitter. We are posting constantly. We have an enthusiastic and well-informed following on both those channels, and really encourage all the listeners to join us.
Well, I know you're a big numbers cruncher, and you're always looking at the cybermetrics of this.
Yes.
So what is the current outreach of ANH?
Well, we have 35,000 likes on Facebook. We have we're close to 6,000 followers on Twitter. And we have an email list that is nearly 250,000 right now. These are all people that realize that their access to natural health is under constant threat. We need to make sure that we protect it, and we protect our freedom of choice in healthcare, food, and supplements.
So let's go through some of the issues which are currently on the front burner at ANH. ANH is sort of like, it's kind of like NORAD, in the old days when we used to have, radar monitoring stations in North America and Canada to see if there were inbound missiles, ICBMs coming at the USA across the poles from launch sites in Siberia and northern Russia. You sort of see incoming threats sometimes to our personal liberty and our freedom of choice. And A&H sounds the alarm early. What are, you know, currently one of the guys that we're eyeing as a frequently appearing villain on this scene is Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois. He seems to have a real axe to grind when it comes to supplements.
He really does. We're not 100% sure where this all stems from, but Senator Durbin has proven himself to be time and time again one of the vitamin and dietary supplement community's biggest threats. He continually introduces a bill that's actually been defeated previously. Matter of fact, when he introduced it last year as an amendment, but the same exact bill that he reintroduced this year, when he introduced it last year, 77 senators agreed that it should not pass. And whenever anybody asks me if the Durbin bill is a good thing or a bad thing, I say, well, 77 senators voted against it. When was the last time 77 of them agreed on anything?
Exactly.
They all agreed that Senator Durbin's bill, is completely unnecessary. It would limit individual choice. It would reduce or shrink the available supplement market, losing jobs, sending companies either abroad or just simply out of business. So Senator Durbin, unfortunately, still has an axe to grind. We're not 100% sure he uses whatever media scare story is out there to reintroduce his bill. Thankfully, the pressure that the Alliance for Natural Health has put on him and our other allies in the Senate, the bill has not passed. We have sent some 100,000 messages to Congress. We've met with many members of Congress and in the Senate. We have their support. But Senator Durbin is a powerful member of the Senate. He's in the Senate majority, and he sits on a number of important committees. And we need to make sure that not only his bill, but also portions of it, aren't inserted into kind of last-minute must-pass pieces of legislation, because we've seen him attempt to do that in the past.
That's a favorite tactic, it seems, in Washington, is to introduce unpopular legislation as sort of a tack-on to something mandatory, like a bill to, like one of these 11th-hour bills to save the American economy from disaster. And oh, by the way, let's regulate supplements.
Sure, and a little insider baseball, that's pretty much, unfortunately, the modus operandi of Congress right now. They have a very difficult time really getting any work done and passing bills in regular order, so members get frustrated, and if they have a bill that they feel that they need to pass, instead of going through a committee process and hearings and markups and then kind of like how we all read about how bills pass in civics classes. Instead of that, we have these last-minute giant government funding bills or omnibus funding bills, and senators hang their amendments on them like a Christmas tree, like an ornament on a Christmas tree. Unfortunately, that's the way of Congress right now, and that's why individuals in the Alliance for Natural Health have to remain ever vigilant. Let everyone know, you have to put up the fight before the battle, and you have to let members know that we're opposed to this, that access to vitamins, dietary supplements is something that's unique and important to Americans, and one member of Congress will simply not be allowed to remove that. So, that's why we do the work we do, and we've got the support of so many hundreds of thousands of people.
Well, A&H is a group that's a grassroots organization, and there is some money there because A&H accepts contributions, but usually they're modest contributions. And can A&H sit at the table when, there's K Street and there's lobbyists and there's, pay to play virtually in Washington when it comes to the pharmaceutical industry, when it comes to big medicine? There seems to be a little opportunity for people's voices to be heard. Do you actually get access to congresspeople? Do you have their ear?
We do, and it's because of our supporters. It's because of the hundreds of thousands of people that take the time to pick up the phone, to send the email, to send the fax, to tell their friends, to tell their families, to post our articles on Facebook, to get people organized, to get people taking action. And yes, that will definitely get us into meetings. All I have to do is send an email to either a chief of staff or a legislative assistant and let them know the number of constituents the Alliance for Natural Health has in their district and the size of our following, and we can advocate for our members and, you know, practitioners, for the integrative physicians and nutritionists that use dietary supplements and integrative techniques in their practices. We can get in that front door and speak to those members. And we've been doing this for some time now. We've built some fantastic relationships and some fantastic allies because there are members of Congress that, you know, believe it or not, believe in dietary supplements and access to integrative health as much as we do and as much as your listeners do. So we want to solidify those relationships, make sure they're allies from here and going forward, and that their staff also understands how important this issue is to their constituents, to the economy, to American freedom.
In a way, it's, and like it or not, the analogy is a little bit to an organization like the National Rifle Association, which is, it's a large organization, but it's certainly not a majority organization. And yet, they are very, very powerful because of their considerable membership in wielding influence in Washington. You know, like it or not, it's not so much about monetary contributions. It's just that a lot of their constituents will base their votes on, pro-gun or anti-gun stances of their legislators. So what I say is, okay, you know, like them or not, let's adopt their strategy, and let's say, paraphrasing the actor, from my cold, dead hands, will you pull my vitamin bottle?
That's true, and you know, we do our absolute best. I mean, that's why we're in Washington, D.C. That's why we have our allies on Capitol Hill, to provide our members and our followers on social media and online the best information. And that's why we get to have that kind of access, because the information that we're providing our membership, the news and the ways that they can contact their members, are so streamlined. They're so specific, and it's really well done. Our staff here does a fantastic job of finding out, you know, what is happening, boiling it down, providing it to our membership, and letting them contact their members. And it's because of that seamless flow of information from you know, our office here in Washington to the rest of the nation for people to contact their membership. Really shows how well organized the organization is, how on message our members are, and how enthusiastic they are. I have a funny story. When I was on Capitol Hill not too long ago, and I was having dinner with a friend, and another friend came by, and he used to work on Capitol Hill back in 1994 when DSHEA passed, and that's the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act that kind of thankfully created this regulatory system where the United States is allowed and Americans are allowed to have access to, through this law, very unique and cutting-edge vitamins and dietary supplements. He remembers the volume of phone calls and faxes and media stories and vitamin stores and health food stores sending in letters, sending in petitions. And it was just one of the, and he said that they believe that they've received more phone calls, letters, and faxes about DSHEA than they did the Vietnam War.
Wow.
That's something that's repeated frequently. And people are so incredibly passionate about their access to this that, that, you know, we've left a mark on the staffers up there on Capitol Hill that we're just a force that it should be reckoned with, and do not mess with us.
Absolutely. I mean, that, there's nothing that warms the cockles of a politician's heart more than, well, perhaps money, but also the adulation and name recognition of their constituents for their stance on a particular issue. So clearly, this could be the advantage of certain politicians. But so who are our stalwarts on Capitol Hill? And what's interesting to me is that this is not the property of one political party. We actually have partisans, it turns out, on both sides of the aisles. It's interesting.
We do, and what's really fantastic is that not only do we have a handful of champions, but we're finding new allies every day. We're finding that some of the older members of Congress have a real stake in this game. Senator Hatch from Utah, Republican, very conservative Republican. Senator Harkin, Democrat from Iowa, quite liberal, are some of the two biggest champions that we've ever had on Capitol Hill when it comes to our access to vitamins and dietary supplements and integrative health. But we also have other allies in Senator Mikulski. We have allies in Senator, a Democrat from Maryland, Senator, Senator Lee, a Tea Party conservative from Utah. We've had a lot of support from different members on different issues as it relates to access to natural health, like bioidentical hormones, labeling genetically modified foods. And so we have a lot of different members on Capitol Hill that support us for a number of different issues. We just had Senator Heinrich, a Democrat, a young guy from New Mexico, recently come out in support of access to vitamins and dietary supplements. We really think that Senator Heinrich is going to be a real mover and shaker on Capitol Hill in the years to come. Senator Rand Paul has been a proven ally. His father certainly was, in health freedom and access to foods and dietary supplements.
And his father is a doctor. Is Rand Paul a doctor, or is he?
He's an optometrist, I believe.
No, the father's an optometrist. I'm not sure about the son. The father's an
ophthalmologist.
The father's an obstetrician, and the son is an ophthalmologist, an eye doctor. Okay, that's interesting.
Yep. And so we've found some fantastic support on Capitol Hill. And on the House side, we have everyone from Congressman Chaffetz from Utah, who's a big-time supporter of vitamins and dietary supplements, to one of the most liberal and progressive members of Congress, Jared Polis from Colorado as well. Huh. And in that 435 members, we have lots of folks, both Democrats and Republicans, that see and hear from their constituents and how important their access to these products, to the practitioners of their choice, and information truly are. And they know about that because of the Alliance for Natural Health and because of all of our support from membership and the public.
Yes, so clearly it's a big tent initiative. It's populist in the true sense because it transcends party lines. Tell us a little bit about one of the latest threats is the compounding pharmacy issue and where that stands. Because A&H, I think, was very instrumental in blunting the impact of a very, very bad piece of legislation.
Yeah, as the saying goes, never let a crisis go to waste, and the pharmaceutical industry certainly didn't let the crisis that was the death of, unfortunately, a number of people because of infected prescription medication that was sent out. These were shots that were inserted into the spine, which are in and of itself very, very dangerous, Dr. Hoffman, you know, but these were contaminated with a fungus. And so Congress moved to increase regulation of compounding pharmacies. And to some degree, it's likely warranted. A lot of some of these compounding pharmacies were producing more than they probably should. They were producing products that were likely a bit too dangerous. They were shipping them over state lines in large batches. Compounding pharmacy traditionally is the creation of unique drugs for individual patients. And some compounding pharmacies were creating large-scale amounts of drugs, and some of which, like these spinal injections, can be quite dangerous. Now, compounding pharmacies are generally regulated at the state level, and we would have loved to have seen more agreement and funding of these state pharmacy boards for inspections at states, even more communication between the FDA and these state pharmaceutical boards, these compounding pharmacy boards, but unfortunately that's not the way Congress chose to go, and they wanted to assert the FDA's role in the regulating of compounding medications. We were quite concerned with a number of provisions in the first few drafts of the bill. I mean, we were in conversations every single day with some of the bill's sponsors, working on the legislation and doing our best to blunt the force and kind of rein in the regulatory blank checks that Congress was unfortunately writing to FDA, and we were successful on a number of items. And the bill has not passed yet in the Senate. It's likely to, but even after its passage in the Senate, it was passed in the House, there's a regulatory process that we're going to be involved in. We're looking at all our options, legal, legislative, and regulatory, just to make sure our concerns that are still with the bill and then the subsequent law are addressed in the regulatory process, and to make sure that individuals and practitioners are still able to get that individualized medicine that they need.
From my perspective as a complementary physician, this threatens to make it impossible for me to use some of the pharmacies that I depend upon because it would be considered interstate use. And what they're saying in parts of the drafts of these bills is that you can only use a pharmacy in your own state. It also prevents me from stocking adequate amounts of some of the materials I need to treat patients, such as intravenous materials. It also makes it impossible or too costly for my manufacturers to continue manufacturing some of these ingredients. So it's kind of like the Affordable Care Act or AKA Obamacare, where, you know, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Well, if you like your intravenous materials, you can keep your intravenous materials, except if they regulate them out of existence, and then they no longer can be available to you. It's also about hormones. It's also,
about
hormones, too. We're also concerned about hormones, and certain hormones are absolutely indispensable for the well-being of our patients, an example of which is a hormone called estriol, which is a bioidentical form of estrogen, and that was in the crosshairs. So there's a lot that's bad about this initiative, and, you know, certainly we want to safeguard people from the ravages of poorly run, unsterile compounding pharmacies, but surely we can rein those in without depriving patients of access to customized, personalized medicine that they need.
And we really did do our best, and we had a number of allies on Capitol Hill that understood those concerns, and thankfully in the most recent version of the bill that was passed in the House, the estriol is safe, that the office use rules are no longer, that the reporting requirements. I mean, just to give you an idea of where the other side's thinking originally was on this bill, there was a provision in the bill that required the physician to explain on the prescription why they were using this medication, a compounded medication, and not the FDA-approved, pharmaceutically available one. I looked the Senate staffers in the eye and said, that is the federal intrusion into the practice of medicine, and we will do everything we can to make sure that this law is stopped. And thankfully enough, a few days later, that provision was gone. But just to give your listeners an idea of where we unfortunately have to start from is quite sad, but we put up a stink. We had some really, really good support on Capitol Hill. We really do believe that the final version of the bill, though we still have concerns, is much better than the original drafts, and we're so thankful that we were there and our supporters were there to kind of take some of the teeth out of it and make sure that individuals can and physicians can still have access to these incredibly important medications.
And on another front, A&H has tackled the GMO question. But I have concerns that the latest initiative in Washington, where we tried to get full disclosure about the GMO content of foods, may now be going down to defeat. The election was held a couple of days ago, but so far it doesn't look good.
No, there are still ballots to be counted, quite a number of them. But
this is in Washington State.
In Washington State. The difficulty is getting, the grade is getting steeper. And even if Washington State, like California before it, does not pass this labeling initiative, there were 26 states that had bills in their state houses to label GMOs. There were a few states that actually passed the first GMO labeling bills. You know, caveat to that, there are some provisions that would delay their implementation. But I think all sides agree that GMO labeling is an inevitable, and the opposition, and I will name them, Monsanto, Dow, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, Pepsi, Coke. I have to believe that they're getting tired of spending tens of millions of dollars every year to postpone the inevitable.
How much do they spend in Washington State on the disinformation campaign to get people to vote no on this?
All told, it's likely going to be around $20 million.
Okay.
In California, they spent almost $45 million. And on top of that, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, which is a large food company association, was sued by the Washington State Attorney General for hiding contributions from their members efforts in Washington State. The Grocery Manufacturers Association had to disclose the companies like Campbell's Soup, Hershey's, Pepsi, Nestle, and others that gave $1,500,000, $200,000 to the campaign. They had to disclose that information. It is likely that the Attorney General will continue to pursue legal action against the Grocery Manufacturers Association. So not only are they spending tens of millions of dollars of their members' money, they're also getting them into legal hot water. So
it's bad public relations, too, for them.
Absolutely horrible public relations. If you go on Facebook, you can see that there are just in large groups of people that go after Cheerios and Frosted Flakes and Corn Flakes and say, why don't you tell me about the GMOs and your products? And they have some very, very the GMO labeling activists has some very savvy media people.
Right.
And these companies are taking huge PR hits.
I feel better in a way about this because the initiative may go down to defeat, but this may be a Pyrrhic victory for the pro-GMO forces because, there's ashes in victory. They may have prevailed and temporarily delayed disclosure of the GMO content of foods. By the way, this isn't to outlaw GMOs. This is just to make it public information. What could be an argument against that?
And especially that this is, people want to find out more about their food. And I was on a radio show with Jonathan Emore the other week, and he's a fantastic attorney, and said, the
frequent guest here on the podcast as well.
The threat to an individual, if the science is out, that does not matter because when you do not disclose the GMO content, it is mischievous behavior, and you are purposely hiding something from a customer. And he came up with an analogy and said when Europe found out that there was horse meat in meat that was sold as beef, genetically it's quite similar, but people were outraged and governments sprang into action. Though, when it actually comes down to the nutritional content, is it substantially equivalent? Yeah, horse meat is actually quite similar to regular meat. But why are we allowed to, why is everyone so upset to find out that it's horse meat and not beef meat? We should still have those same rules when it comes to genetically modified foods, that not disclosing it is mischievous and individuals have a right to know.
And it's a personal choice. If you want to eat horse meat or if you want to have GMO, you look at the science on both sides and you're convinced that GMOs are safe and wholesome for you or your family, have at it. It's just the clear light of scientific inquiry shined on the product.
They could have nipped this in the bud a long time ago. And what's really interesting, the Alliance for Natural Health has said this, and so have so many others, that this technology has been around for 20 years, and if people have doubts about it, it's not our fault. It's your fault for, A, not providing all the wonderful science and the information to the public to make them so enthusiastic about your GMOs. It's your fault for not doing that. But secondly, when you look at a car or a computer, you can find out immediately what are the things that run it, and that information is disclosed to the consumer. Why do food companies want to hide this information, where every other product out there proudly proclaims the technologies that live inside of it or make it operate? So if it's so great and it will save the world and will provide nourishment to impoverished people everywhere and increase food yields, well, I don't know why they're not telling the whole world about the GMOs that are in food. But they are acting in a manner that is counter to our progression into more transparency about the things we eat, the foods we consume, the air we breathe, the water we drink. So it's completely contrary to the direction that consumers are heading, that Americans are heading, and it's a losing battle. And the sooner they figure that out, the better.
You know, like no one else possibly in the country, you have your finger on the pulse of the media when it comes to this beat, you know, vitamins, supplements, and the politics of regulation of these things. And I think you've been an observer on the scene long enough to notice that there appears to be a campaign that is either loosely organized or highly coordinated between the media, big medicine, government regulators, and the pharmaceutical industry to poison the well when it comes to supplements. Articles that talk about the hazards of supplement use or herbal medicine are often highlighted and uncritically passed along to the public in lurid headlines and articles in newspapers, magazines, periodicals, on TV. And there's a lot of, it seems, collusion between, you know, sort of like it's like a four-legged stool, where they seem to be hand in glove of passing information along and trying to create an aura of suspicion and concern about supplements.
We've seen it, and the evidence is there, because you'll find these unsubstantiated claims from government officials, and then they start appearing in different publications, and you realize that there is a concerted effort behind the scenes between some regulators and media outlets and possibly pharmaceutical companies that really want to do their best to smear whatever good news or growth of interest and use of dietary supplements. Now, case in point, yes, the other day, Johnson & Johnson was fined $2.2 billion for civil and criminal violations for the marketing of dangerous psychotropic drugs.
That was, and one of them was Zyprexa, I think, for dementia, for patients who are elderly patients, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, to mention these monstrous fines, incredibly illegal activity, it's like howling at the moon. People just assume that, and it rarely makes news. It's an article, but you know, one person might have a stomach ache from a vitamin they might have taken last year, and it's headline news in every single media outlet. But 100,000 people die every year of properly prescribed pharmaceutical drugs, and people shrug their shoulders, or media shrugs their shoulders, and just say, well, that's the cost of doing business. And you have half the United States using a vitamin or dietary supplement regularly. We've got billions and billions of dosages every year, and we have yet a handful of any adverse events. If they were as dangerous as they say they are, the bodies would be piling up in the street, and we would be some of the first yelling, you know, let's not use these. But we have more skin in this game than anyone else, Dr. Hoffman. You know, our friends, our family, your patients, our colleagues, we use these, and we believe in these. And these are the kind of, and then you often come up against this, this media kind of juggernaut that, you know, likes to find the one horror story, if they can even manufacture them. Case in point, there was a workout supplement called DMAA, and there was a poor soldier who had sadly died at a training exercise in the desert. And when they did a autopsy, they found DMAA in his system. And a state senator in New York introduced a bill to ban it. There was media all over. The Defense Department did a year-long study into this autopsy and came away with that DMAA did not contribute to this soldier's death. Yet that did not stop bills being introduced in USA Today and others, media just running and jumping out at how horrible this product was and how it killed this soldier. But in the end of the day, what is it? What's the line? A lie can make its way around the world while the truth is still putting on its shoes. And that's what we frequently find with the media and vitamins and dietary supplements. When there's a report that we know is going to be biased, that's coming out, the New York Times and all the press get to have access to that report before the general public does.
Yeah, but they're, so-called embargoed. In other words, that they,
yes.
they as a person in journalism, I get these things frequently. They say, this is coming up, prepare to release this story, but it cannot be released before 12 noon on such and such a date. And all the newspapers get the inside scoop on that. Hopefully you get the jump on it so you can prepare the damage control before the story gets too widely disseminated.
Well, they rarely send it to us,
exactly.
They rarely want it in any of our hands. So, you know, we're always playing catch-up, but it's a coordinated effort. But, you know, we have some fantastic tools, your radio program, our website, the Internet, Facebook, Twitter, social media, that and you just cannot stem the tide of individuals that want new information, that are tired of what they're being told by their regular physicians, by the pharmaceutical companies and the media. You know, do the same old, I'm sure the outcomes will change. They want new direction, and that's why they're seeking out different ways to obtain better health.
Another important initiative that ANH is getting behind is to push back on the American I believe they changed their name, the American Dietetic Association, who wants to monopolize nutrition credentials, make it impossible for people other than RDs, registered dietitians, to provide nutrition advice in various states. And a state-by-state initiative, because I don't think it can be a federal initiative, but they go in with big lobbying efforts and big bucks. And, you know, it sounds, at first glance, that sounds like a reasonable initiative, you know, so that only qualified professionals should be dispensing nutritional advice. So what's wrong with that?
Well, you find out that their motivation for this is to monopolize the industry to prevent other, even very well qualified practitioners from dispensing this advice, nutrition advice. And they do it in a manner to make sure that their credential. And here's the unique thing. An RD, a registered dietitian, it's a private trade group. It's not a government license. It's a private credential that's provided to you if you follow their rules and recommendations. And it only requires a bachelor's degree, and it requires a lot of time and study into things like food systems management and marketing and institutional food preparation. Courses of study that are decades old, and many could argue very easily that have not been a large benefit to the American public. There are new credentialing programs. There are nutritionists that have followed a different path into the nutrition profession, the non-RD path. And they are as qualified, if not even more qualified, to provide nutrition advice. And in many states, they're licensed, they are practicing, they write books, they're interviewed in media. And the Dietetic Association, starting back in the 1980s, wanted to prevent any other nutrition credential or any other nutrition professional other than their own members from providing this advice. And so they've attempted state by state to pass their state laws. Thankfully, the Alliance for Natural Health, along with a number of fantastic other organizations, individuals, have defeated 11 out of their 12 introduced bills over the past 2 years. That we're finding that state legislators just do not have the stomach, particularly when you have growing obesity, lack of information about food preparation. And you find in many states that the number of RDs just simply cannot meet the demand of that state. In Florida, we found out that it's a state of over 19 million people. There are only 3,000 registered dietitians. That's compared to the 119,000 registered nurses that are in the state. And the RDs in Florida want to be the only folks in that state that can provide nutrition advice. So it's a classic example of a professional trade group trying to limit competition so they could increase the payments to their own membership. And thankfully, not only has the public seen this and are saying no to it, but state legislators are. And there are even a number of court cases right now that are challenging these state laws on nutrition advice. There's one now that's in federal court. In North Carolina, there was a blogger who was giving out advice about his paleo diet. He was obese and he was diabetic, and the dietitians at the hospital told him to eat low fat. They kept giving him more carbs and more sugars, and he felt worse. He did some research and found out a different way to eat and a different way to exercise and got much better, and he was telling the world about it, and he was providing advice online. And the advice that he was providing was things to buy at your supermarket, ways to prepare it, ways to eat to be healthy. And the state dietetics board reviewed his website and said that he was providing nutrition advice without a license and sent him a cease and desist letter. He thankfully blogged about it, and a fantastic nonprofit law firm picked up the case, the Institute for Justice, and sued the state board. And it's going to be heard in the federal court that this blogger, that free speech includes advice. It's that simple. So we have everyone from, the ACLU and libertarian-minded legal firms to the Alliance for Natural Health and major media are really getting behind this and seeing how absolutely absurd it is for one professional trade group to try and corner the market and tell ordinary citizens and even highly credentialed PhDs that only their membership, who only have a bachelor's degree in dietetics, should be the ones to provide nutrition advice in the United States. So it is a battle that I'm personally very involved in and passionate about, and do believe that in the end we'll be quite victorious.
So much for freedom of speech, because in this country you can maintain an Al-Qaeda website, you can maintain a Ku Klux Klan website, as long as you don't, kill people, blow them up, or burn crosses on their lawn. But you can express even hateful views. But you can't put up a paleo website in certain states urging people to eat a low-carb diet.
It's absolutely absurd. And it's so absurd that it has finally gotten the attention of the of state legislators, of media. There's been a couple fantastic articles in Forbes, the Washington Post. George Will has written about it. A number of state newspapers have written about the expansion. And it's not just even in dietary advice. It's in all kinds of advice that none of these state boards are trying to argue that you providing advice is similar to a dentist filling a cavity or an electrician installing wiring, that your advice is conduct, and we say advice is speech. And that is really one of the big dividing point on this issue. So it'll be decided in state houses, in the courts. And even thankfully, this administration has actually recognized the problems that are associated with a lot of these state regulatory boards. And the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has come down on our side of health freedom on a number of these issues, because they're seeing these state boards far exceed their regulatory mandates and their legislative mandates, and they're entering into these little worlds of fiefdom to try and protect their kingdoms from any types of new technology or new competition. So the federal government's now even becoming more involved in this issue. So the tide has definitely turned.
That is very well said. In conclusion, what other initiatives can people who subscribe to ANH-USA.org look forward to ANH, the Alliance for Natural Health, pursuing in coming year 2014 and beyond?
Well, it's going to be to continue to protect our access to vitamins and dietary supplements and the practitioners of our choice, and to the issues that we talked about, GMO labeling, protecting consumers from bad legislation, both international treaties and state laws and federal laws, and also keeping a close eye on the FDA. We're the only consumer group here in Washington, D.C., fighting for your health freedom.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Daryl Rogers. You certainly provide us with lots of food for thought. And, the action point on this interview is go to anh-usa.org and sign up. Sign up for their newsletter. If you want to make a modest contribution, you may not be able to match the contribution of Monsanto or Coca-Cola, but every little bit helps. Because this is a very, very important initiative. I'm working very hard on it as a board member of ANH, and I encourage you, listeners, to get involved. Thanks for joining us, Daryl Rogers.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.